Probably most of you haven't heard of him before, and but I have heard a lot of nice things about him. He's been traveling around the world for quite a few years now, teaching about Bhakti Yoga and Krishna consciousness, and I've heard so many nice things about how he's a very sweet speaker and willing to give all sorts of incredible insight, and hopefully also tonight he'll be willing to answer a few questions that some of our guests may have. So he's doing a presentation entitled Victory on the Inner Battlefield. Sounds great. So Maharaj, thank you very much for coming. Please, let's have a big round of applause for Bhakti Rasa.
Before you begin any activity, you have to invoke auspiciousness. And the best way to invoke auspiciousness is to chant Krishna's names. Nothing better than that. You agree? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare,
thank you. Krishna, 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 Krish
Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama to invoke auspiciousness before I begin to speak. That's the tradition. Om Ajnana Timiram Dasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nivitam Yera Tasmai Shri Gurubhavi Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Ajhyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Purim Dalishnavamayascha Shri Rupam Sakkajatam Sahaganaratunatam Vitam Vitamisajinya Sattvaitam Savadrutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahaganarita Shri Vishakam Vitamisajinya Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Saraswate Devi Gaurabani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane Vanchakrubhyascha Kripasindubhya Devacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. I'm very happy to be amongst all of you this evening. As Yashoda said, this is my first visit here. I also hope not the last one. I've heard about this place and wanted to come here. Somehow I couldn't make it on my visit last year. And I'm happy that I've been able to make it this year. And the topic I was asked to speak on was quite fascinating, even for me. A victory on the inner battlefield. A battlefield generally conjures up visions of battle cries and flowing of blood and bullets and bodies and decapitated bodies everywhere, violence and so on. So the word battle somehow doesn't go down well with a mind that wants to seek some peace and happiness. So when we speak of spiritual life and you talk of a battlefield, then it might seem some kind of a contradiction, a term that's misplaced perhaps, but in many ways it's appropriate, and I'll get to the point a little later. But before that, I just want to dwell briefly on the idea of victory on a battlefield in general. Great heroes in history are acknowledged and recognized for extraordinary accomplishments when it comes to military activities or perhaps economic or cultural conquests, even intellectual conquests. And generally this is how victors are remembered. The most common are those who put victory on the battlefield. They lay down their lives or something like that, and that's appreciated. The pages of history are full of examples of great conquerors. When you use the word conqueror in world history, different names come to mind. Napoleon, Alexander, great conquerors from a material point of view. Napoleon must have conquered hundreds of thousands of square miles of territory. So did Alexander. At a very young age, he died only when he was 33. When he was on campaign, his kingdom stretched from Greece all the way down to the northern borders of India. Just imagine in those days, more than almost 200,000, or 2 million I think, square miles. Huge territory. And then you had many, many other conquerors in every country. And of course, Genghis Khan, remembering school history, is actually the largest conqueror in history. He started off as an orphan in Mongolia. And he grew up and became one of the most dreaded and feared conquerors in world history. He conquered an area equal to something like over 4 to 5 million square miles. And just before coming, when I was thinking of that figure, I did a quick Google for the area of Australia, and I found it was about 2.9 million square miles. And Genghis Khan conquered about almost 5 million square miles, which means a full Australia and two-thirds more. That's the kind of territory that Genghis Khan conquered in Central Asia, China, Mongolia, reaching all the way up to Europe, and on horseback in 20 years. And that's phenomenal, isn't it? So history is full of such conquerors. And so generally, because these are the ones that are given prominence in history, we tend to think of conquerors in military terms. We might also think in terms of economic terms, of how economic conquest happened, and that's happening in the modern era. We have the multinational corporations who straddle different parts of the globe and have conquered the markets, so to speak. So there's economic conquest. There's cultural conquest. People through the fields of music, through lifestyle, clothing, and various other things conquer the world. Rock stars, for example, conquer different parts of the world by their, not militarily, not physically, but through their music and through their mass appeal, and induce millions to adore them, worship them. And they become their followers. Some of them give up their lives to get an audience with them. So they have such a devoted following. It can make even the most sober of people lose mental balance to have so many millions of people adoring you like that. But they have conquered the world. Similarly, when it comes to sports stars, movie stars, and so on, culturally they conquer large parts of the world. There's also something we can call as intellectual conquest. I don't know how it is in Australia, but in India, till a couple of centuries ago, there used to be intellectual debates, competition, just like we have Olympics and so on for sports. There used to be intellectual competitions where great scholars used to come and debate on something mundane, some logic or something like that. And the greatest scholar would then be called a Dig Vijaya Pandit. Dig means directions, Vijaya means conquer, Pandit means a scholar. So a scholar who has conquered all the directions. So because he could defeat all the other big scholars in debates, so he was considered a great conqueror. And there was various other forms of conquest that the pages of history have shown us. Most of them not very pleasant. History is full of one person exploiting another, dominating another, injuring another. History is full of brutality, savagery, viciousness, exploitation. That's basically what history is, the history of conquests. I remember one very pithy definition of history given by somebody. I don't remember the author. And maybe it's not very polite to use a word like that, but I'll define it anyway. He said, what is history? History is merely one damn thing after another. That's how we define history. Because that's what history in this world is all about. Violence, brutality, pain, ego. Somebody's ego being so... What are most of the battles fought for? Just ego. Conquest, because I want to be the lord of all I survey. I came, ini, vidi, vici, yes? I came, I saw, I conquered. So Caesar and so many other great conquerors all over the world were impelled or driven in their conquests by their egos, by lust, by greed, by anger, by envy, by pride, by illusion. These are the forces that drive the conquests of this world. Even the religious conquests. Most of the religions have expanded all over the world by violence. Until today that happens, and that's the reason religion gets such a bad name, and people would have nothing to do with religion because they say anyway, it's just the source of so much hatred and bloodshed. And that's not religion, what religion is supposed to do. Religion is supposed to make you a good person. And here we see that religion causes so much hatred and division and bloodshed. So there's something wrong with religion. So we want to reject it. And to a large degree, the apprehensions of people are well-founded. Because that's what history tells us. Conquests in many cases have been motivated by the idea that I must impose my religion upon others. And usually invading armies come with a religious agenda. They come with a military force, subjugate the natives, and force them to accept their religion. In Sanskrit this is called dharma dhvaji, that those who hold their flag of their religion and then say, my religion is superior to your religion, and therefore I will conquer you in all these respects. I will conquer you politically, militarily, economically, culturally, religiously, everywhere I will subjugate you and subdue you. So this is what conquest has shown in history. So even religious conquest has pretty much had a military or a physical exploitative connotation in the history of the world. However, that's not the kind of conquest that I'm going to speak about today. That's not the kind of conquest that we want to have in our life. We want a conquest that is not smeared with blood, with hatred, with violence, but we want a conquest that eventually leads to love, to all the divine qualities like mercy, compassion, kindness, forgiveness, tolerance, mutual understanding, sharing, caring, giving, rather than just exploiting, taking. The history of great conquerors is that they killed large numbers of people and they stole a lot of the property of the people in the lands they conquered. Attila the Hun, whose empire stretched from Germany all the way up to the Caspian Sea, as well as Genghis Khan, about whom I spoke a short while ago, they were known for building mountains of skulls, meaning they would kill so many people that eventually what would be left behind are just literally, not just figuratively, literally there would be mountains of skulls, meaning dead bodies. And they plundered the properties and wealth of the local population. This has always been like that. And from where I come in India, when we studied the history of India, it's also like that. Whenever invaders came, they raped the women, they plundered the wealth, and they subjugated the local populations. All over the world, this is the history of conquest. And it's all because, even though they wanted to conquer the world, that in many cases they